Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Courtney Dominguez.
Steve Martinez, welcome to the Ivy Podcast. Thanks so much for being here today.
Courtney, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure always to have some time to sit and chat with you.
I think this is going to be a great conversation. So first, let's go ahead and tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and your career.
Oh, thank you. Put me on the spot to tell people my deepest secrets now.
That's right.
I'm currently the senior director at NTT Data Services. We're an IT services company that helps organizations in the life sciences, financial services, insurance, manufacturing, and the public sector in partnering with them to help them out in achieving their goals while navigating the dynamic digitalization that we're encountering today. I'm part of the consulting arm, working with organizations that are making their transitions to an agile environment.
So Steve, that's you and I met as when you were an agile coach. So I know you've got extensive experience in this space. So I think it'd be great to just start off by explaining maybe what business agility is. And then, you know, if you can tell everyone what you do as an agile coach, that would be great as well.
Absolutely. Business agility. That's really, to break it down to its bare bones, it's an organization that has the flexibility to react to internal or external events while maintaining or increasing their customer value delivery and staying profitable. But there's also another aspect to business agility, and that's the cultural agility within it. Cultural agility, you could have everything in place. You could have the SOPs in place. You could have the technology in place that allows you to shift priorities and adapt to whatever situations the market or economy may unleash upon you. But if the people don't behave in an agile fashion, then you're not going to have that business agility. You're still going to have that rigid organizational operating status.
So as an agile coach, how do you help organizations achieve that? So, I mean, you know, we worked together in the past and I know culture is a huge part of this. So specifically, how do you help organizations try to achieve that?
So what I try to do is I place myself as an enterprise coach. I think that my ability to align leadership with the workforce that's executing on the strategic organizational goals and creating that two-way alignment is what I try to influence and enable. That means getting the organization, working with leadership to get the organization to focus on what's truly the goals, to identify what those goals are, and have the workforce actually develop so that they can deliver that value to the customer without the additional fluff or non-value added type of work. A lot of organizations, if they really took a look at what they have in flight at that moment, they would gasp because they'd see our total operating costs are being applied to X number of, you know, projects that we really don't need right now. And so my role is to get them to organize, prioritize, and really capture that one thing that any organization would love, and that is predictability. Because with predictability, you're able to tell your customer, hey, I could get you this by this time. And that's invaluable.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, it's all about delivering value to the customer. So, and it's how you go about doing that and getting the organization aligned to work more efficiently, I think. And the end goal is always the customer. So that's you know, always what you should be focused on as an
customer
organization.
Customer centricity, absolutely.
So what do you see? I mean, I'm sure you get to work with a lot of characters. Yeah. What are some of the pitfalls that you see with organizations when they're trying to, you know, I think agile for a time now has been a buzzword. And it's more than that, obviously. But what do you, so organizations are trying to embrace it, but what do you see kind of some of the mistakes that organizations make as they try to make this shift?
Well, I think one of the biggest mistakes, at least from, say, an organizational perspective, is that they think that it's something that could be repetitive. You could you could use best practices to duplicate the outcomes. And while that may be true in certain instances, really every organization is unique. Every organization has you know, unique factors within itself and external to itself that influence how it is, how it works. And by taking someone else's template, you're trying to fit a square peg in a round hole. And a lot of times the organization is reluctant to really take a deep look at itself and really have those retrospective or introspective talks about what they could fix in order to become more agile. Instead, they want A, B, C type checklists that would enable agility. And just doing agile is not sufficient to be agile.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I mean, I think I've seen organizations that they, like you said, have like a template or a blueprint, or this is how this other organization did that, so I'm going to go ahead and implement that same model here. And, you know, every organization is different. Every, you know, has its own set of things that they're trying to accomplish. And so I don't think that there's a neat box that you can necessarily put around the organization.
No, people have their unique personalities, and an organization is a system of personalities within that. So you can imagine the minefield of obstacles and challenges that you have to navigate in order to get the organization operating in a streamlined way. So yeah, absolutely. A template is not necessarily the best thing.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why we need folks like you to help us, you know, to figure out what some of those, what best practices look like, and then how do we make those fit within our organization?
Every organization needs a punching bag. Hey, it's not the face.
Try to aim lower. So Steve, McKinsey published a report in June 2020. So, you know, last year was a challenging year for everybody, that reported that companies that had already adopted some kind of agile practice had outperformed their peers when they were managing the impact of the COVID-19 crisis. This suggests that companies that have not adopted agile operating model were less effective. So as companies adjust and we're coming now into, I think, what becomes a new normal, I'm not sure we ever really go back to the way things were. And I think there's some kind of new normal going forward. How do they consider, going back to the traditional operating model, or should they continue to, you know, should they be happy they weathered the storm and they're coming out of it and then they go back to their traditional operating model, or should they really continue to look at those agile principles and continue to develop those within the organization?
Oh, you know, I think that to begin with, every organization that was impacted by this pandemic has become agile in some aspect, whether they like it or not, or whether they realize it or not. And I'll tell you that if they weathered the storm, yes, they'll have a tendency to snap back to old practices if things go back to the way they were. Unfortunately, if we use, say, the 2008, Great Recession that we went through, there were ramifications and ripples that are still being felt today. Things changed. Nothing went back. Companies realized that having the ability to pivot to accommodate or adjust their business model or end their operations to a new normal actually helped them. And if they weathered the storm, they're just going to see value in that. So I think that there is going to be an increase, a very big increase in business agility, not necessarily only talking about IT agility, which most people tend to think about, but really business agility. How do we move our talent into new areas to accommodate this new reality that will help us keep us afloat or still maintain service to our customers? If organizations, and there's going to be some that will revert back because their business model allows that. Construction, it's not something that you can really be very agile. I mean, I can make the argument, but I'm not going to. But those are far few in between. We're living in a modern world. Everything's technology-based, and requirements are ever-changing. There's endless variability. So I think that if you don't embrace agility in some way, and you have the ability to, or you have the capability to, then yeah, you're going to be suffering the next big thing that comes around, because, you know, the market doesn't just keep going up. It suffers its ups and downs.
I think, you know, to your point about the business agility, I think what I saw with companies is that the business team is the one that had to shift very quickly. You know, the technology, IT, we're used to working digitally. We're used to working in a maybe a more virtual environment, just by the nature of what IT does. But I think for businesses maybe that were used to sitting in the office and still printing out banking statements and invoices, and, you know, there was still a lot of paper involved. I think those are the ones that quickly had to figure out how to pivot, really. And so I'll be curious to see if some of those things that companies either moved away from or started doing because they needed to be more digital and be more agile and more nimble in responding to the environment that they were in. I'll be curious to see. I hope a lot of them stay anyway, because I think that there was a lot of innovation and a lot of good things that came out of the ways of working and how that evolved over the past year or so.
Yeah, it should open eyes, and I'm hoping it should open eyes that just the way that things were going doesn't mean that there isn't opportunities to improve. As they say, you know, relentless improvement is what we're after. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, completely agree with you.
So as somebody who's spent extensive time as an agility coach, what advice are you giving to leaders about, you know, working in the current environment, and also to other agile coaches? I mean, I know you do a lot of networking and you work very closely with other agile coaches. So what advice are you giving to both the leaders and the companies that you're working with, as well as some of your peers?
So that's a great question, because it's one of the, you know, initial discussions I have with when it comes to organizations and the leaders. They have this concept or this preconception that, oh, we're going to do everything faster, cheaper, and at a great price. But really what I do is temper their expectations to reality. And that is, the first value that you're going to capture is going to be realizing that you're maximizing the amount of useless work that's not being done. In reality, it's going to be a savings. You're going to end up going slower because you're going to be taking a much more careful look at what you're building and what the value is. And through that, you're going to end up filtering a lot of the work that you're going to realize does not add value, mm-hmm. does not support growth, does not map to the organizational goals. And that's money in your pocket. Money not spent on useless stuff is well earned. And I also tell them that their focus should be predictability. Every operation, that the value of that predictability is priceless. Most organizations that, you know, leadership and business owners or line orgs, they tend to throw work at people that, you know, do the how of what they're asking. And they don't have an idea of how that work is done. It's a black box. Mm-hmm. So you can't understand what the timings are or how long something will be delivered if you don't know what's going on in there. So by having that transparency, you're going to gain predictability, and that's only going to help you in achieving your goals and servicing your market that much better. You said advice for my peers.
Yeah. Putting you on the spot.
Yeah. For all you other knuckleheaded agile coaches, I'd say quit the scholarly discussions about whose framework is better and start paying more attention to what your client needs rather than having any particular personal preference.
I think, can you dive into that a bit more? Because what do you mean by framework?
Okay, so some people, you know, there's different agile frameworks out there. It's, yeah. You know, agility has many different ways, as they say, you know, there's many ways to skin a cat. There's many different ways to apply agility within an organization. You have Scrum, Nexus, Scaled Agile Framework, Kanban, and you have individuals that resonate to each of those, I want to say, denominations. And they tend to be, you know, they tend to hold it dear in their heart. And mm-hmm. when there are small little differences in beliefs or in interpretations of how agility should be applied. And that's where these discussions and disagreements happens among the industry. That being said, those disagreements are useful, very useful. I'm not saying don't do it. They're useful because it helps people think outside the box, and it gives an opportunity for everyone to hear multiple sides of an issue, and that's how your knowledge base grows. But sometimes, you know, some of us get wrapped around the axle and chomp down on an issue. Don't let it go.
Like a dog with a bone.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think, you know, one of the things that has evolved, I think, quite a bit throughout this past year has been the way that leaders communicate, and that checking in with your team, you know, how do you make sure people are okay? And, you know, obviously most of us have been doing that over Zoom for the past year. And I know one of the principles in the Agile Manifesto is really having that face-to-face conversation. So I think there's some, how do you reconcile what's in some of those principles within the manifesto and things that organizations should be doing, and now really having to do them virtually? I mean, you know, you and I chatted the other day, and it's very difficult to put sticky notes on the wall when everybody's in a different room, right? So, yeah. I mean, there's ways you can virtually do that, but maybe not quite as much fun as doing it when you're in a room all together. So, you know, how do you see, or how do you feel like this is going to be evolving, where, you know, you have these principles and now you're maybe doing them where you're not all in the same room, or even in the same state in some cases?
Yeah. Organizations before the pandemic really were operating with dispersed teams as a need basis. It wasn't ideal unless it was cost effective, whether you hit, you know, certain regional markets that make it lucrative in that sense. However, now everyone is dispersed equally. Mm-hmm. And what we try to, at least what I try to always say, is the principles, the Agile Manifesto, those are principles. They're not commandments. You know, you are to strive to live up to those principles. You may not achieve it, but you come as close to it as you can. The face-to-face communication is the best way of conveying information. I cannot deny that it is the best. However, can you do just as well of a job? Yeah, we are video conferencing right now. And the benefit of that is that there's a personal connection, and you have these nonverbal cues when I'm explaining something or I'm being explained something. And if I don't understand, I may crinkle my brow. I may have some telltale signs. You actually become a poker player but really you determine a lot of the how information is being interpreted through that face-to-face communication. That's why reliance on video conferencing has become such a pivotal thing to focus on as a result of this remote work that we've encountered. And out of necessity comes innovation. I've seen so many new platforms and applications that provide assistance to help that coming together and actually collaborating together. You know, you have Boosting and Miro or Mural that, you know, allow for just collaboration, planning, and even training classes to be conducted as if you're sitting there in that same room. So, the way I approach it is by having people strive to come as close to the capabilities as you would if you were in person in front of a whiteboard. If you could accomplish that through collaborative tools and whatnot, then you've done your job.
I think some of the tools too, I mean, some of the features that have come out in some of these tools are so cool. You know, whether that's breakout rooms, or whether that's the, you know, feature in Teams where it all looks like you're in a stadium or a classroom or whatever, and you're all together. Yeah. I mean, I think the technology has evolved because, I mean, maybe, I'm sure a lot of these things were already in the works, but I think the technology has quickly evolved to be able to help in making it feel, even though we're all virtual, making it feel much more like we're, you know, together and we're collaborating, and it feels like a team. So I like some of these things that have come out, and I think it's really been born out of necessity.
It's actually a great example of business agility right there, because these technology companies were able to respond to this whole remote work movement as a result of the pandemic, and they've adjusted and upped what the most valuable features that they had, and delivered it to the customer. And I mean, you have platforms that have a repository and inventory of tools that you would never have dreamt of if the pandemic didn't hit.
Yeah, and I think just they came out so quickly. So, you know, these tools came out so fast, and now we're all using them every day. We can't get away from them. And a lot of that, you know, is going to continue to evolve, and hopefully as quickly as it did, you know, to be able to respond to the circumstances that, you know, we were all kind of thrown into at the same time, a little over a year ago.
Yeah.
So, Steve, tell me a little bit about, you know, like I said, you've been an agile coach for a while. Tell me a little bit about what you love about it, and like any job, it's got some challenges as well. So, you know, let's give our folks a listeners or a bit of feel about, you know, what it is to be an agile coach.
So that's a good question. What excites me about being an agile coach and consulting in general is the fact that I don't get a chance to get bored, because I see so many different clients, so many different business models and scenarios. It's endless. So you never encounter something that is just repetitive. And that resonates with me personally, because I do tend to find repetition a little boring. And then I like to keep it fresh. And when you're dealing with new personalities, new business models, new challenges, it really keeps you sharp, and it keeps you thinking outside the box. So that's what I like about agile coaching and consulting. What I don't like, unfortunately, what comes along with these transformations are really looking at some of the anti-patterns that exist within an organization. And one of the ones that really, you know, gets me is the one where organizations don't value their workforce. They don't value their employees. They see them as an endless capacity. They pay more attention to what the plan is rather than what reality is. And if that means, overworking at an unsustainable pace, you know, their talent and stepping on their work-life balance, then, you know, that's disheartening for me. And it's not easy to see, because a lot of teams end up with what I always say it's a form of PTSD. They are very rarely going to look out for the organization, because if they raise their hand, they're going to be afraid it's going to get slapped. Figuratively speaking, of course. That's one of the hardest things for me to witness. And that's actually what I try to help overcome in these transformations.
I think that, you and I are both consultants, and I think one of the challenging things, like you're saying, is trying to help an organization do what's best, but yet you still see some of those same behaviors that they're not going ahead and changing. So I think that it's frustrating, especially as a consultant, because, you know, you're there to help. And so when you still see some of those same behaviors, it's challenging.
Yeah. And it's also challenging for the simple fact that we're not part of that organization.
Yeah. Right.
So
exactly.
We are put in a position where we can only influence to a certain degree.
Yes.
And you know, when things start hitting the fan, we become sometimes, unfortunately, that know-it-all in the corner that's only saying what you should do, and people will tend to not pay attention to that. And that's the unfortunate part in those situations.
Right. I go back to your comments earlier about having a poker face. I think that's one of the lessons I learned. One of the very first lessons I learned as a consultant is to make sure you have that poker face, because you can't always wear your feelings on your sleeve.
Oh, you got to have rhino skin in this business.
You will
encounter some tasty comments coming your way.
Yes.
That won't feel well.
Yes, it is one of the first lessons I learned. So many, many moons ago, and it's stuck with me ever since. So, you know, you're there to consult with the organization, and at the end of the day, they can do as they wish.
Yeah, absolutely.
So as I'm going to put you on the spot one last time here. So I know it's a good one though. So as an agile coach, one of the things that you help organizations realize is that failing is an opportunity. And I think that's another great lesson to think about in life, right? Is everybody encounters that at some point. So can you share with us a time that you failed and how did you turn that into an opportunity?
So, great question. That's a question that it's hard to answer because, you know, it makes, you know, it's a vulnerable position to be in, to admit one's failures. But you know what? I am game because I think that I have to practice what I preach. So let's see. One of the failures that where I've learned. First, I like to say that I teach organizations. I instead of saying it's okay to fail, I'd say learn fast. Take an obstacle or a failure and get some learning out of it. Because if you just fail and don't learn, then it's a wasted opportunity.
Yes.
So I was working with a client and one of the first things that I do when I work with a client and trying to help them transform is first do an assessment. I assess their agile capabilities, their current agile maturity, if they've been doing some form of agility. And based off of that, I could create a coaching roadmap that will allow me to address some of the anti-patterns that exist and work with leadership and whatnot. And this organization was one of those ones where they didn't want to necessarily hear the academics or get agility taught to them or retaught to them, even though they needed it. But they wanted that template. And my stubbornness, I kept at it. It went against what I firmly believed because I had drinking the agile Kool-Aid, you tend to take an approach that you have to take a retrospective look at what has been done before and improve based off of that. And it's a lot of discussion and that's not what organizations want. Sometimes they want to be led by the hand. Mm-hmm. I didn't agree with that. I tried the persuasion and the client got frustrated and said, you know what? Thanks, but no thanks. What I learned from that was I could have achieved the same thing by meeting the client where they were at. The client wasn't ready to have those types of conversations for whatever reasons they had, whether there was very little trust or amongst themselves that would allow them to really open up and be transparent about what needed to be done. Looking back, what I learned was that if I did provide them with a template and let them fail using that template, I could have then provided tried this differently and persuaded them in a much more hands-on and tangible way, rather than trying to get them to realize it through conversation. And that was my failure to recognize that early on. And my pit bull syndrome of latching on and hanging on to an idea, I actually ended up biting me in the butt. So that was my failure, but I did learn. And I think that I've carried that going forward to every other client. And that is really paying attention to what they want. And if they want to learn things the hard way, then it's going to beg the questions of why didn't this work? And I'll be there to guide them.
Thanks for your honesty. I think that part of that is really learning and figuring out how to evolve, right? And be able to do something a little bit differently next time and hopefully be more successful in getting the organization to evolve and do what hopefully is best for the company and all of their people in it. So I appreciate that.
No, my pleasure.
Steve, this has been great. I am so excited that we got to catch up and that you and I were able to have this conversation today. So really appreciate your time. And I look forward to hopefully catching up in person in the future.
Courtney, thank you for having me. I had a blast, and let's do this again very soon.
For sure. Thanks, Steve.
We really hope you've enjoyed this episode. Please take a moment to rate, subscribe, and leave a review on your preferred podcast listening platform. We really appreciate that effort. Until next time.